And if you would take your Bibles, we'll be, for the most part, looking in the book of Ruth and continuing our series of going through just a quick survey of what each of the books are about. So Ruth is short enough that I can actually talk about it at length and still manage to get my sermon done in a reasonable time. The book of Ruth takes place during the time of the Judges, the book that comes before it, probably the latter part of it, because it mentions at the very end that it's three generations before King David. But the book of Ruth, verse 1 says, "Now it came about in the days when the judges were governed, that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man in Bethlehem and Judah, went to sojourn in the land of Moab with his wife and his two sons." The book of Ruth as a whole serves as a contrast to what we learn in the book of Judges. The book of Judges is fairly much a gloomy book because we constantly see a cycle of people going into sin, God finally sending somebody to punish them, sending them a deliverer when they finally turn back to God, only for them to go back to going back to their sins, and oftentimes in a worse state than they were before. In fact, if you look at the very last book of the book of Judges, it says that in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. But unless you get an idea that is widespread and is total, the book of Ruth tells us, no, there were glimmers of hope in Israel, even during this time. Because here we find a story of love and a story about some very high moral people. Strong standards are shown here. And like the characters we find mentioned in the book of Judges, the main characters of these stories are basically unexpected heroes. Because the main characters are a devastated widow and a widowed Moabite woman, somebody who's not even from the land of Israel. In fact, the book is named after the woman who's from Moab. And if you think about that, that's kind of unusual. It's because the Israelites, especially by the time we get to Jesus, they had such a strong prejudice against non-Israelites. And here there's a whole book that's basically, at least in the Septuagint version and our version, named after a Moabite woman. And it explains how Ruth became basically the ancestress of Israel's most famous king, David, and ultimately the ancestress of the Messiah. And now because it mentions in Ruth chapter 4, verse 17, it says, "And the neighbor women gave him the name of, saying, a son has been born to Naomi. So he named him Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David." Now, because it mentions who his grandson was, therefore we know the book was written at least during the time of David or sometime following. And because it didn't mention any other generations, probably during the time frame of David. But the story also tells us how God rewards those who make wise spiritual choices and show steadfast love and devotion in their lives. We start on chapter 1 with a long series of unfortunate events happening to one family in Israel. A family is driven from their hometown of Bethlehem because of a famine in the land. Abimelech moves to Moab with his wife and his two sons. They decide to stay, but at some point in that journey in Moab, Abimelech dies. And the two sons, who are now young men, take on two Moabite women as their wives. And it mentions in about 10 years total they've been in Moab, but then they too also die. So Naomi has become a widow, has two sons, though, to support her in her old age, but they, too, die as well. So Naomi decides to return to her town of Bethlehem, because she had heard that the famine had ended. And her daughter-in-laws go with her. Now, we don't know if possibly they had only intended to take her to the border of Moab just to travel, because it's not good for a woman to travel alone. Or whether the intentions at the very beginning were always to go all the way to Israel with her or not. But somewhere along the journey, Naomi tells her daughter-in-laws, no, you need to go back home. And she decides she's better off to go on alone. She tells them they can't place any hope in her because she's not going to be able to offer them any other husbands. In Ruth chapter 1, starting with verse 11, it says, but Naomi said, return, my daughters. Why should you go with me? Have I got sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Return, my daughters, go, for I'm too old to have a husband. If I said I have hope, if I should even have a husband tonight and also bear sons. Would you therefore wait until they're grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it's harder for me than for you, for the hand of the Lord has gone forth against me. She basically is saying, because there was a custom of that day that women died without or husbands died without children, their widows would then be married to the next oldest son. And Naomi says, I'm too old to have any more kids. I'm just too old even to have another husband. And besides, would you wait that long for the kids to grow up, even if I did have any kids? And she said, it's not practical. I can't offer you anything. And she's absolutely certain that God's against her. Because she's looking at her life and looking at all the misfortune. Everything just keeps going wrong. In fact, she mentions this again in chapter 1, verses 20 and 21. She said to them, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara. For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has witnessed against me and the Almighty has afflicted me? She just posited God's against her and everything's gone wrong. In fact, she just doesn't even want to be called Naomi because that name means pleasant. She said, call me bitter, Mara, because that's more what my life has been like. And like many people that are in situations like that, Naomi basically had decided by this time that she was better off alone in her misery. And she didn't want her daughter-in-laws to go with her. Orpah returns, but Ruth refuses to go. And we have probably the most famous statement in Ruth that's mentioned here in verse 16. But Ruth says, do not urge me to leave you or turn back from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Thus may the Lord do to me, and worse, if anything but death parts you and me. And by that, basically, Ruth is declaring her choice. She says, no, I'm going to be an Israelite. Basically, she was one of the early proselytes to Israel. She's leaving behind her family, her nation, her gods, saying, no, I'm going to follow after Naomi's God. That's something that all of us have to understand, is that there are choices to be made. Elimelech made a choice. He left Israel because of a famine in the land. And from the world's point of view, it was a good business type of choice. There was not enough food where they were at. They moved to another country. But as a result of that choice, though, Naomi had a lot of misery. Because Elimelech died. His two sons died. Whether it was directly a result of that decision or not, we don't know. But Ruth also then made a choice. She made a choice to leave Moab for a new country and the true God. Hold your finger here and take a look at Mark chapter 10. Mark chapter 10 and verse 29. Mark 10 verse 29, it says, Jesus said, "Truly I say to you, there is no one who has left house or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or farms for my sake or for the gospel's sakes, but that he shall receive 100 times as much now in the present age, houses and brothers and sisters and mothers and children and farms along with persecutions, and in the life to come, eternal life." A lot of times we focus on what we leave. And we have to understand that God's offering things to us. Ruth decided to leave things behind so that she might take up what God offered her. Now, as they come back to Bethlehem, which is also known by the name of Ephrath, when they come back to Bethlehem, they make quite a stir. It's a small town. Naomi's been gone for 10 years. And everybody takes note of the change that has happened. That's where Naomi just says she wants to change her name. Nobody listens to her, though, because all through the story, she's continued to be called Naomi. They get back right at the time of the barley harvest. In Ruth chapter 1, verse 22, it says, "So Naomi returned, and with her Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, who returned from the land of Moab. They came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest." Now, under Israelite law, some things need to be mentioned because they had customs and traditions that we don't practice. Not that they're, in fact, I believe the Israelites' customs were quite a bit better than ours. But to understand it, hold your finger here and let's go back to Leviticus 19. And verse 9. Leviticus 19, verse 9. "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap the very corners of your field, neither shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest, nor shall you glean your vineyard, nor gather the fallen fruit from your vineyard. You shall leave them for the needy and for the strangers. I am the Lord your God." And another law also, it is in Deuteronomy 24, Deuteronomy chapter 24 and verse 19. Deuteronomy 24, verse 19. "When you reap your harvest in your field and have forgotten the sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it, for it shall be for the alien, for the orphan, for the widow, in order that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat your olive tree, you shall not go over the boughs again, for it shall be for the alien, for the orphan, and for the widows. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not go over it again. It shall be for the alien, for the orphans, and for the widow. And you shall remember that you were slaves in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I'm commanding you to do this thing." So basically, what God is saying is, what, like, for instance, when they're harvesting a field, and you might have a square corners in your field, they were told that purposely they were not to harvest to the corners. They leave the corners alone. And the reason for that was that they became then the food for anybody who was in need. And all they had to do was go out and pick it. Not only that, but God also basically said you're not to be thorough in your harvesting. If you drop some things, you leave it there. And anybody who's needy can come back and pick it up. And you go through your vineyards and you pick all the grapes. You don't go back a second, third, and fourth time to make sure you have every grape picked. You do your picking and then you leave the rest for anybody who's poor. And this is the way they operated. And this is the way they basically had welfare. This is one form of their welfare that they had. They didn't just hand out money to anybody. They just left it opportunities for other people to benefit. What Ruth does in Ruth chapter 2 is she volunteers to go glean after the harvesters to provide for herself and for her mother-in-law. In Ruth chapter 2, verse 2, it says, "And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, 'Please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after the one in whose sight I may find favor.' And she said to her, 'Go, my daughter.'" So Ruth says, "We need food in the house. I'll go out and do the gleaning." They were both widows. They needed the funds. And the field that she happens to choose to work at was that of Boaz. Verse 3, it says, "And she parted and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech." She didn't know this. She just picked a field to which to work. And it sounds like just a coincidence, just chance that she happened to pick the right field. Later on, we've realized that no, this is probably God's hand, God's providence involved in this. We're not only told that it was Boaz, but in verse 1, we were introduced to Boaz. It's now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. He's a rich man. He's prosperous. And it's probably that reason why she happened to find that field and decided to choose it. But that's not directly because she had, you know, decided this was a relative, so therefore this is the field I need to go to. In fact, she might not know exactly who Boaz was. Seeing Ruth working in his fields, Boaz, when he's visiting, asks his workers, "Well, who is she?" In verse 6, it says, "And the servant in charge of the reapers answered and said, 'She is the young Moabite woman who has returned with Naomi from the land of Moab.' And she said, 'Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves.' And thus she came and has remained from the morning until now, and she's been sitting in the house for a little while." So in other words, she's been there all day, is what the man said. She had asked permission even. She didn't just go out there and start picking like it was basically her right. She asked permission. And she says she's been working hard all day. Then from morning until now, she's right now taking a break, but she'll probably be back on the field again. Now, as soon as he was told who Ruth was, now he knows the connection. He's now aware that this is the Ruth that he's heard about with Naomi. He knows that he's related to her. And so he goes to tell her of several things, starting with verse... he tells her that he's to stay... He wants her to stay in his fields and work with the young women there. That's safer for her. He also tells her that he's told the young men not to touch her. And he gives her permission to even go to drink from the jars that the young men bring to the for the harvesters for their drinks. She's willing. If she gets thirsty, go get yourself a drink from there. Which is more than what's asked for. And when Ruth asks why she, a foreigner, is getting such a kind treatment, she finds out that her reputation has preceded her. Starting in verse 11, "And Boaz answered and said to her, 'All that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband, has been fully reported to me, how you left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge.'" He said, "I know why that you left. You came here on your own. And you're taking care of Naomi. So yes, I want you to be favored in working here." And Ruth, we find, politely thanks him in return. Verse 13, she says, "I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and indeed spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants." She said, "I'm not an Israelite, but you've been very kind to me." And she thanks him for that. Now, he doesn't stop there. When it comes lunchtime in verse 13, or sort of verse 14, it says, and then at mealtime Boaz said to her, come here, that you may eat the bread and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar. So she sat beside the reapers, and he served her roasted grain, and she ate and was satisfied and had some left. Here, just join the rest of us for lunch. And not only that, he gave her some of the food that they were eating. She had enough to satisfy her and still had leftovers. Not only that, he basically, behind her back, gives some instruction to the laborers in the field. Verse 15, when she rose to glean, Boaz commanded his servants, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not insult her. And also you shall purposely pull out for her some grain from the bundles and leave it that she may glean and do not rebuke her. So in other words, if she strays off the path and get into the section that you haven't harvested yet, don't say a word. And oh, by the way, I want you to be extra clumsy. Because the law was basically if you drop something, you can't pick it back up. So, by the way, I want you to be extra clumsy so that she has plenty to pick up. At the end of the day, she gathers about an ephod of barley. That's about 2.4 pecks or 0.6 of a bushel. Working that out, she basically gathered about 29 pounds of barley that day. Which would be, if for someone who's supposed to be just picking up the leftovers, that's quite a bit of leftovers. And notice that she also worked all day and then continued into the evening. And when it came to evening, she started processing what she picked. This is not a lazy woman. In verse 17, so she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephod of barley. And the amount she gleans from the scraps was more than she should have found, and Naomi notices this. In verse 19, her mother-in-law then said to her, where have you gleaned today? And where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, the name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz. And we want to know, where were you at? Because he was generous. You got more than you should normally would have gotten. And Naomi then realizes that Ruth has been favored by a close relative. And she suggests also, well, you need to continue working at his fields. Because it would be safer for Ruth. You got to remember, this is the time of the judges' way. Anybody did whatever they felt like doing. It wasn't necessarily safe for a woman by herself. And so look at verse 22. It says, and Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maids, lest other fall upon you in the field. And so she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest. And she lived with her mother-in-law. So she stayed there not only throughout the barley harvest, but she also stayed through the next harvest as well, working in the fields of Boaz. I want you to notice some things about this. Notice how kindness is shown here. Ruth is willing to work long days to supply food for herself and for her mother-in-law. Boaz shows generosity as well as a sense of sensitivity, sympathy for Ruth, for a foreign woman who's working in his fields. You know, because he tells his workers not to touch her, not to insult her. And he makes his gifts look like, well, just normal, everyday business. He doesn't force gifts on her. He doesn't make it look like, well, she's just, you know, being accepting gifts from somebody else. She's working for it. He just happens to be providing more than she realizes. And the result of all this, well, we find that by the end of this, Naomi's faith in the Lord is restored. She had decided God was against her. And now she's realizing, no, God's been looking out for her. In fact, take a look at 1 Peter. Again, hold your finger here, and let's go to 1 Peter chapter 5. And I'm starting with verse 5. 1 Peter 5, verse 5, it says, "You younger men, likewise, be subject to your elders. And all of you, clothe yourselves with humility towards one another. For God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you at the proper time, casting all your anxieties upon him, because he cares for you." This is the lesson that Naomi was learning. God cares. And at the proper time, he'll bless us. Now, one of the things that Naomi still has on her mind is, what will happen to Ruth? And in verse 1 of chapter 3, then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you?" Ruth still needs a future home. Now, Naomi is not going to live forever. And as we mentioned, the Israelites had a law for childless widows. Hold your finger here and go back to Deuteronomy chapter 25. Let's read that law real quickly. Deuteronomy chapter 25, starting with verse 5. So when a man takes a... When brothers live together and one of them dies and has no son, the wife of the deceased shall not be married outside the family to a strange man. Her husband's brother shall go into her and take her to himself as a wife and perform the duties of a husband's brother to her. And shall be the firstborn whom she bears shall assume the name of his dead brother, that his name may not be blotted out from Israel. But if the man does not desire to take his brother's wife, then his brother's wife shall go up to the gate of the elders and say, "My husband's brother refuses to establish a name for his brother in Israel. He is not willing to perform the duty of a husband's brother to me." Then the elders of his city shall summon him and speak to him, and if he persists and says, I do not desire to take her, then his brother's wife shall come to him in the sight of the elders and pull his sandal off his foot and spit in his face. She shall then declare, "This is done to the man who does not build up his brother's house." And in Israel his name shall be called the house of him whose sandal is removed. And this is the basis behind what happens in Ruth. I don't think personally that Naomi was particularly aiming for marriage for Ruth. Though she might have had some hope about it, I think she was looking at it saying, well, he's the closest relative. He's responsible. Maybe we can get him to do some favors for us. So she has Ruth wash, put on her best clothes, and she gives her specific instruction. Now, don't let Boaz notice you until later. In chapter 3, starting with verse 3, she says, "Wash yourself therefore, anoint yourself, put on your best clothes and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he's finished eating and drinking. And when it shall be that he lies down, you shall notice the place where he lies, and shall go and uncover his feet and lie down, and then he will tell you what you shall do." Now, why the uncovering the feet is important has been a source of debate for centuries. Because that custom is not practiced anymore, so people are trying to guess why. Most likely, Ruth's actions, at least to me, demonstrates her willingness to put herself under Boaz's feet. And that is to become a servant in his household, or possibly a concubine. In fact, we get the hint of that in verse 9, when he says, "Who are you?" And she answers, "I am Ruth, your maid or servant. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative." Basically, she's saying, take me as into your household. And she's basically asking to become a servant. Because she's using the word for servant there. In his household, just like the maids that were working in the fields earlier. Why at night? Probably to avoid any embarrassment. Because basically Naaman wants to leave an opportunity that if he doesn't want to do this, he can get out without anybody knowing that she asked. Because after all, she's being a little forward. And in approaching him and asking him to take her on as a servant. Usually it's the other way around. What's interesting, though, is Boaz is honored that Ruth would offer herself to him. We get the impression, as you read earlier, that Boaz is actually quite a bit older than Ruth. Because when he first meets her, even though she's a foreign woman, he calls her my daughter. So we get the impression he's probably an older man. And in verse 10 he says, then he said, may you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after the young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask. For all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. He agrees to consider her offer. He praises her. And he says, he's saying, I'm flattered. Because you didn't chase after any of the young guys. Did you actually ask me? And while she was wording this as a terms of her becoming one of his servants, he's taking this as a marriage proposal. Now, yes, not normally does the woman go up to the guy and ask if they want to get married. And she technically didn't really do that either. But that's the way he's taking it. Though he doesn't say that directly. He agrees to consider the offer. But here again we see the honor of this man. Because he says, well, first I got to check with one other gentleman because there is one other closer relative than me to you. And he has the first right of refusal. So he tells her to stay the night because the threshing floor is out of town. He doesn't want to send her back in the middle of the night. But he also suggests that she leaves early to protect his reputation and hers. And when she leaves, he then tells the other people there not to let it be known that a woman was on the threshing floor that night. Verse 14. So she laid at his feet until morning and rose before one could recognize another. And he said, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. That's his instruction to his servants. Don't say anything about that. He wants to protect her reputation. But he would not let her go back empty-handed either. In verse 15, he says, and give me the cloak that is on you, and hold it. So she held it. And he measured six measures of barley and laid it on her. And then she went into the city. Don't know how much she gave her. Because actually in the Hebrew it says he gave her six. It doesn't say what quantity of six. That's why it just says measure. Because they don't know what kind of measure was being used. But it probably was a hefty amount. And that gives her, one way to look at it, gives her an excuse when she goes back in town what she was doing. She was getting grain. But it also might be serve as a message to Naomi that he's going to take care of him. We don't know all why he did it, other than we definitely know that it shows again Boaz's kindness in taking care of people. Naomi does understand what Boaz plans, that he's planning to do something about that proposition. In fact, she knows it's going to happen that day. She says in verse 18, then she said, wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has settled it today. She knows Boaz well enough. She says, I know that guy. He's not going to let this go until he gets it settled, and he's going to do it right now. He's going to do it today. And he does. But what we see is the integrity of the people involved. Ruth is known as a woman of excellence. And though Ruth approaches Boaz at night, he doesn't take advantage of the situation. He makes sure that her reputation is preserved. And it becomes clear that Boaz has more than gaining a servant on his mind, because he insists that the nearer relative be given the chance first. And again, that's a part of honor. He could not mention that nearer relative at all, and just took advantage of what was being offered, but he didn't. And we see joy then returning in chapter 4, because Boaz catches that near relative at the gate. We're not told that relative's name. Now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there. And behold, the close relative whom Boaz spoke was passing by. He said, "Turn aside, friend, sit down here." And he turned aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, "Sit down here." So they sat down. The gate of the city is where older men would often gather. They were acting as judges for the people. This is where they had their judges. They didn't have elected officials like we do today. Older men in the city were basically appointed as judges, and they would offer advice, make judgments, act as witnesses to transactions. Basically, this is where the legal process was taken care of. It was at the gates of the city. Take a look at Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 18. Deuteronomy 16, verse 18. "You shall appoint for yourselves judges and officers in all your towns which the Lord your God is giving you according to your tribes, and they shall judge the people with righteous judgment." And depending on translation, it mentions this takes place at the gates. He then informs the man that Naomi either sold the family land or was about to sell it. Depends on your translation and how you read the Hebrew at that point. And he suggests that the man redeem the land or purchase it for himself to keep it in the family. And again, this is according to what the law said. Going back to Leviticus 25. Leviticus chapter 25, starting with verse 23. Leviticus 25, starting with verse 23. It says, "The land, moreover, shall not be sold permanently, for the land is mine. For you are but aliens and sojourners with me. Thus, for every piece of your property, you are to provide for the redemption of the land. If a fellow countryman of yours becomes so poor that he has to sell his property, then his nearest kinsman is to come and buy back what his relative has sold. Or in the case of a man who has no kinsman, but so recovers his means so as to find sufficient for its redemption, then he shall calculate the years since the sale and refund the balance to the man to whom he has sold it, and so return to his property." And so it was part of their laws that if you basically want to keep the land within the family. And so he suggests to this nearest relative that he ought to do that. The proposition was of interest to the man up until he learned that Ruth came with the package. And then he lost interest in it. In Ruth chapter 4, starting with verse 4, "So I thought to inform you, saying, buy before those sitting here and before the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if not, tell me that I may know, for there is no one but you to redeem it, and I am after you." And he said, "I will redeem it." Then Boaz says, "On the day that you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also acquire Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of the deceased, in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance." And the closest relative said, "I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I jeopardize my own inheritance. Redeem it for yourself. You may have my right of redemption, for I cannot redeem it." And if you think about it, you wonder what's going on here. You see, if Ruth has a son by this man, then that land that he just purchased would go to the son. And so he's looking at it and saying, okay, say it's going to cost $30,000. Okay, I'm going to take $30,000 and buy this piece of land. And then, oh, by the way, as soon as I have a kid with her, it goes to the kid. So I just took $30,000 away from my own kids. He probably already had kids. Took $30,000 away from my kids' funds. And it just went out to his other family. You know, it would be one of his own children. but it wouldn't be counted as his children. It would be counted as Elimelech's child. And so he says, no, that's not a good deal. He's looking at it from the money point of view. You don't just throw money and get nothing for it. So he indicated his refusal by giving his left sandal to Boaz. Going back to that one in Deuteronomy chapter 25, that said that basically if somebody didn't want the bride, then she's supposed to take the left sandal. It looks like that law basically got modified over the years. Where before it was basically a point of shame, now it becomes a matter of contract. And to show that he didn't refuse, he just hands over the left sandal. He doesn't get spit in the face either. But she's not there either, for that matter. But it also doesn't apply as far as the law goes, because that law was for a brother. He's just a near relative as well. What's interesting, too, is because of the way it's worded, it looks like by the time the writer of Ruth writes about it, that even that part of the custom had disappeared. Because notice how it's worded in Ruth 4, starting with verse 7. Now this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning the redemption and exchange of land to confirm any matter. A man removed his sandal and gave it to another, and this was the manner of attestation in Israel. So that the closest relative said to Boaz, buy it for yourself, and he removed his sandal. Basically, they didn't have written documents and deeds recorded someplace because there was no central government. So how do you prove that you bought the land? You gave him your sandal. And that became proof that there was a land transaction in those days. By the time David comes along, there's now a central government, and they're starting to use deeds. And so it had fallen out of practice. Boaz then announced that he would redeem Elimelech's land and that he would marry Ruth in verse 9. And then Boaz said to the elders and all the people, you have witnessed today that I have bought the hand of Naomi at all that belonged to Elimelech and all that belonged to Shalom and Mahlon. Moreover, I have acquired Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, for to be my wife in order to raise up the name of the deceased on his inheritance, so that the name of the deceased may not be cut off from his brothers or from the court of his birthplace. You are witnesses today. And all the people who were in the court and in the elders said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, both of whom built the house of Israel. And may you achieve the wealth of Ephrath and become famous in Bethlehem. Moreover, may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah through the offspring which the Lord has given you by this young woman. And so from this union comes a son named Obed. The name Obed, by the way, means servant. And it's given to him actually by the neighboring women of all people. Perhaps in memory of the fact that Ruth had offered to serve Boaz. And Naomi's joy is then restored to the fullest. In verse 14, then the woman said to Naomi, blessed is the Lord whom has not left you without a redeemer today, and may his name become famous in Israel. May he also be to you a restorer of life and a sustainer of your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you and is better to you than seven sons has given birth to him. And then Naomi took the child and laid him in her lap and became his nurse. And the neighbor women gave him the name, saying, a son has been born to Naomi. So they named him Obed, and he is the father of Jesse, the father of David. And so the book of Ruth becomes in a very apt illustration for a passage that's found in Hebrews chapter 6. Hebrews chapter 6. And starting with verse 10. Hebrews 6, starting with verse 10. For God is not unjust, so as to forget your work and the love which you have shown toward his name, in having ministered and still administering to the saints. And we desire that each one of you show the same diligence, so as to realize the full assurance of hope until the end, and that you may not be sluggish, but imitators of those who through faith and patience inherited the promises. Throughout the book of Ruth, we see God's providence at work and learn that he will work in our lives as well. We don't see miraculous things happening out of the blue, but rather just events happening just right to bless the family who had suffered quite a bit. And is rewarding those who are following faithfully what God had taught. We see shining examples of people who are following God's way and prospering as a result. And we ought to take hope from that, because they were, like I said, living in the times of Judges, where wickedness was all over the place, people were doing things their own way, and here's a family that's doing it God's way. And look how well things just happened to work. And we know it's not just happened, because it was God's hand in it all the way through. I hope you think about these things. If there's anyone here tonight who's not a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And if there is anyone here who is a child of God, I'd like the prayers of the brethren on the behalf. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song for us?